Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Yama, I'm Bo Spearham. Kumarai, Kuma and Mara Wari, and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go on any further, I'd like to pay my respects to our old people and everybody who was joining us around the continent and where this broadcast and where we are broadcasting from and also to. I would also like to pay respects to young people who are tuning in around the continent via the National Indigenous Radio Service, NIRS, or tuning in via our website, 989fm.com.au. And as always, it's a pleasure. So recently, there was an article in the Sydney Morning Herald titled, "Anti-Lockdown Activists Spreading Dangerous Lies About COVID Response in Indigenous Communities." Now, this article was written by First Nations man, Jack Lattimore, who joins me on the program this just now. Hey, Brother Jack, thanks for making some time and coming on the program.
It's a pleasure, Bo. Thanks for having me on. And, good to be back.
Definitely, brother. And as always, as we do in many places and in many settings, could you tell us your mob, please, and where you're from?
Well, Grandfather Size, Biripi, on the northern end of the state, Rollins Plains, Port Macquarie, Mariah River mob, and Nan side was Dungaddy, up around Southwest Rocks, into Yamaja sort of side as well. So from all around up that sort of neck, and then got family right up the coast into Brisbane, actually. But that's my traditional sort of countries down there on Pop's estate.
Deadly, brother. Thanks for that. We'll just get straight into it, brother. As I just mentioned, you read an article in regards to all this misinformation that is being spread, and in particular in remote Aboriginal communities in the Northern Territory. First up, brother, how did you approach this? This story.
Well, it's interesting, and I guess all listeners have kind of come across it on their social media because it was fairly prevalent Thursday, Friday. And then with the latest round of the Kuka rallies on Saturday, I think it continued to proliferate based on what's being called misinformation, but I think by Saturday it was clearly disinformation, deliberate. The way that I came to this story, well, that's the one that's published that you referred to. I collaborated with Simone Fox-Coob and Rachel Dexter. These days I'm writing for The Age, which falls under 9 newspapers, of which the Sydney Morning Herald is probably the most prominent one. But I was actually last week out in East Gippsland working on a project that's to do with the Europe Justice Commission. What we're doing there is I go out ahead. The commission hasn't been able to start due to COVID lockdowns. Very frustrated. So now that we're able to travel around the state, we've sort of started going out to meet people in community, elders, young ones that feel that they've got something to say on past injustices or what they might want to submit to the commission. Anyway, that was occupying my time. And on the drive back from East Gippsland, Rachel Dexter started sending through on the platform that we use at work a few images of people that had got tied, blackfellas, or people professing to be blackfellas, who had been tied up in some of these Kuka rallies down here in Victoria. Now, the screenshots, and she was asking me to identify some people, or whether I knew them, whether I knew the sort of links that they had. So I started to have a look at those and, just sort of built from there, really. And it got around to this article last Thursday. And I actually seen that video floating around. Someone forwarded it to me of June Mills, falsely claiming that, you know, the army was forcibly administering vaccines and forcibly detaining people up around the Greater Katherine area. Now, I got on to Brother Jordan Perry, who is in the NITV now, head of digital, and basically said, you know, let's check this out. Pretty much have a strong feeling that it's not going to be exactly the case that we heard from June Mills in that video. But, you know, let's just approach it with our journalist caps on objectively and try and verify what's going on. Of course, it wasn't. That became clear pretty early on. NITV published the first story, and I just given Jordan a hand wherever I could, because I felt that it was very important that we put a pin in that as quickly as we could. And I felt it was very important that it came from an organisation like NITV in the first case. And then by the next day, a little bit more had come out. And working with those guys, Simone and Rachel, we published with The Age, and got a run in Sydney Morning Herald and elsewhere. And it sort of, because we've got a larger reach, it sort of kicked off a little bit more. But, yeah, and then, you know, not long after that, I think the day after, and this, I don't know if anyone's fully aware of this, but June Mills released another video on Saturday, basically saying that she had had it wrong. She got it wrong in her initial video. She apologised. It took a lot of dignity and grace to do that. She apologised for getting it wrong. And you can find that video online. You can probably find it, you know, if not on June's own account, you will find it shared. And you should be finding it just as easily as you would find the one that was full of misinformation. But, whether you do or not, who knows?
Yeah, brother. And, as you mentioned, you know, Aunty June came back pretty quickly, you know, recounting sort of what she said in regards to what's happening in these communities. So, you know, obviously some of the mob from those communities reached out to Aunt as well. In regards to some of the stories that you guys did, who were you speaking to in regards to in the Northern Territory?
Well, I went, when I was given Jordan a hand, basically just went straight to the army in the first case. And then I went, basically saying, we've got to hear from Mal, Mal Indiri McCarthy. I know for a fact that she has family in around some of those communities. And I know that from my time working at NITV. So I felt it was really important that we heard from her. And I think Jordan jumped onto a few people up around Rockpool, and a few other places like that. But, you know, we were able to establish pretty easily for the NITV article. I don't take the credit for that. It was mostly Jordan, and he was working with someone as well. And they got that out. And, just speaking with people on the ground there, but those were the main ones, Mal, the Army. I was talking with Congress, Central Australian Aboriginal Congress. It's just really clear, really early, that these sorts of things weren't occurring. But then it came down to getting official comment and building the story and stuff, and I would have liked to have got this up immediately, but that's not how it works. But it was good to see, actually, that once NITV published that, then, you know, for all of the things that we know about News Corp, they were quick to get the NT News down there, and they released some videos of their journalists talking with mob. And it got busted pretty quickly, like all media sort of come together to sort of, you know, bring the truth, put some clarity around it. And that needed to happen too, because, you know, if my concern in the first case was that when these sort of things take root, it's really difficult to make the necessary adjustments, to provide clarity. I hope that we got there in time, but then across the weekend I seen, and this is what I was alluding to before, there's still people claiming that the sorts of things that were said in Arnie June's original video, it's still the case, and there was a couple other videos floating around as well.
Also,
if I can just... David Cole. David Cole's one.
David Cole,
complete disinformation. And that has been, you know, the people from those communities have come out and spoken. The way that these videos are put together, he's got other individuals standing next to him, it appears that they're far more representative than what they are. And, you've got community members that come out and pretty much reveal that things aren't the way that they're portrayed in these sorts of videos.
If I could just sort of jump in really quickly, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off before, brother.
Good.
One of the things that really, in other words, like upset me in regards to people saying, oh, I know the military is going in into these Aboriginal communities is, you know, half the people, you know, that are saying this, whether or not they care about sort of what has happened in these communities over the last 15 years or the last sort of, I think it's maybe 12 years now that the intervention's been in, like the military has already been in, you know, these communities and they've already quarantined, you know, payments and all these other things that they've done, you know, under sort of the lies of sort of the anti-intervention. And, you know, they want to talk about discrimination and they want to talk about segregation. Like they, to implement the anti-intervention, people forget, like, they had to suspend, they removed the Racial Discrimination Act to do something racist, you know, to our mob. And, you know, like, there's so much, you know, as you're saying, this disinformation where people ain't even, you know, like I was around with people online over the weekend in regards to sort of the people who were leading these movements. And one thing that I kept saying in a lot of comments was, do you even know what has happened, you know, in the Northern Territory over the last sort of, you know, decade? Do you know that the military has already been in there, you know, and you want to talk about lies and discrimination and all these things, like, go read a book or Google, you know, the history.
Well, that's the thing as well, that this is, it feeds on very real anxieties from those communities and from people outside of those communities in the same region and from people interstate who are also Aboriginal, like, and, you know, being down here in East Gippsland, the intervention affected down here as well. Out at Lake Tyres, and not many people know about that. So that's the danger, is that, and, you know, that's the grift that these grifters latch onto. And they're pretty good at the grift. But they see a vulnerability, they see that these real anxieties can be easily exploited, and they know how to do it, and they are ruthless and relentless in the method in which they do it. They need to be called out. And,
definitely.
I was talking with some older fellas down here that I'm not going to reveal their names, but they're older leaders within the community down here in Victoria and elsewhere. And in the past, they've been very prominent Aboriginal spokespeople. And they basically were telling me on Friday that it's time to start calling these grifters out. And that's what I'm going to start doing now. And I feel that, you know, I've got their support behind me. They've got to an age where they can't do it as effectively as they would like. But I think it's incumbent upon all of us to start calling these grifters out.
Because
they're a parasite on our people.
Oh, definitely, brother. You know, it's definitely something that we need to do as well. And one of the things that your article did that that was really interesting is it talked about blackfishing. I've never heard of it before reading this article and sort of seeing it online throughout the weekend as well. Could you tell us what blackfishing is?
Well, it's a term that was new to me as well, and I guess it comes from catfishing, which we possibly know about from online, and you know, MTV's got a show about it. There was a movie about it. It's where people pose as something else in order to lure, you know, usually a partner in, a form of gaslighting in some ways. So the victim believes that they're involved with somebody else, that clearly this person who has assumed a fake identity is not. And it can go on for years, and it can be, you know, on a personal level, it can be quite damaging. And I guess that's where the blackfishing comes from. In this instance, there's a few things that blackfishing can be. In the instance that we're talking about, it is, in a way, draping these Kuka movements in the colours of the Aboriginal flag and the sentiments of Aboriginal people to intimate that there's greater Aboriginal support for their agendas than what there actually is. Now, that's not saying that there's no Aboriginal people at all involved in these agendas, because as we know, we're very diverse people. There's many of us that hold many beliefs. We go in many directions. There are Aboriginal people that are involved in this movement or in these agendas. I've got family members that believe in some of these agendas. You know, they're there.
Same,
but they're not
same.
Aboriginal leaders. They're not Aboriginal spokespeople. They're individuals. And as we know, we're a collective culture. These are individuals that have gone in that direction. Now, down here in Victoria, we had one that was billed on Saturday and other weekend rallies, named Zelignac Jabberung, is what he's calling himself. He's otherwise mm-hmm. known as Darren Turner down here in community. Now, he's an individual that has gone to these rallies and is speaking as an Aboriginal leader, which, where I come from, my people, is not on. And I'm pretty sure that it's pretty much the same down here. Now, this is a person that has been involved in the Jabberung 10 embassy and, off the back of that, reached some degree of prominence. This is also a person that, and that was a woman's place down there, this is a person, I've been told, attempted to lock out senior Aboriginal women from that place and got chopped for it, got pulled up, got lifted. This person has also known issues with substance abuse in community and mental health issues. Now, from his own agency, he's got himself involved with these agendas. But the crook bit is that he goes there and speaks as though he's a leader of community.
Mm.
Now, that sort of grift is becoming more prevalent all around the joint. They're the ones that need to be called out. And they need, you know, some of our senior people within community to call them out. Now, we were talking off air before. The problem is that a lot of these very sort of prominent people that have been the spokespeople within our communities and movements and things in the past, they're now getting on a bit. They're up, you know, 60s, late 60s, 70s, that sort of era. So it's up to other ones to step up and start calling these people out. And that's what I heard on Friday night.
It's everywhere, as we mentioned before. You know, you mentioned some names in the NT, as well as down there. You know, we have mob up this way as well, and up sure in New South Wales. You know, that are actively sort of being part of these as well.
Josephine Cashman, it's time. She's a grifter, and it's time that she gets called out. Now, she incidentally went on the front foot of a rant on Saturday, calling out Mark McMurtry and David Cole from the original Sovereign Tribal Federation. So I'll leave that in her camp. There's three that need to be called out right there.
Also, not to mention that I think we mentioned it off air as well that a lot of the people leading these rallies have been known to support sort of far right movements, and then also have actively worked to undermine, you know, Aboriginal cultural heritage, Aboriginal connection to country. You know, up here last week we had Clive Palmer attend the Brisbane rally, Pauline Hanson attend one of the Queensland rallies. You know, so even enough, if you know, even if that's not enough of a red flag, that we have these individuals sort of going in and they're actively out there sort of recruiting, you know, as well as sort of these right wing Nazi groups that are out there as well. And you could sort of hear it in the sentiment and in what they're saying as well in regards to what they think about not just this pandemic, but, you know, what they think about sort of other people and where this sort of virus originated from as well. It's quite scary listening to some of these people, you know, and then as you mentioned, you know what I mean, they're posing as, you know, they're blackfishing, you know, now trying to wear an Aboriginal flag T-shirt or fly an Aboriginal flag to sort of pose as if, you know, they're not these things.
If anyone cares to get on Telegram, create a fake account, embed themselves within some of these dialogues that are happening and this organising that's happening in these channels on Telegram, you'll see that you have non-Indigenous people, non-Aboriginal people, non-First Nations, whatever your chosen term is, you have them on there organising with other people that, you know, I would say are Aboriginal, of Aboriginal ancestry, identity, whatever. And they're basically organising how to, drape these agendas in the flag. And you've seen that in some of the photos from down here in Melbourne. I didn't see in Sydney, where you had people wandering around with the flag. I mean, there was that image that I posted on Twitter last week, which was taken from a rally in Tweed Heads. It was an anti-vax rally, and you had a young woman on someone's shoulders, the Aboriginal flag behind her, and she's holding a sign painted in the Aboriginal flag colours, saying, "Hold the bloodline," something like that, some phrase like that, "Hold the bloodline." Now, just step back, "Hold the bloodline" has got direct links to, you know, pure blood, white supremacy, you know, crap. But the way that that image was presented on this account that has been utilised by Reignite Democracy, which has got known links to the Lad Society and other far-right groups down here, is that she was Aboriginal. You only had to click on the link for her account and read one or two posts down to see that she was not Aboriginal. She was South American. She'd been overseas and had a, you know, one of those moments, got a skin name or something, and come back, and, you know, here she was going. So, as JP joked to me, you know, NAIDOC person of the year 2022. Clearly not. And you've got that happening all around. There's another one down here that during the, you know, in inverted commas, tradie demonstrations, she was on Instagram, and I spotted her doing her little videos around the joint. Looking at her account a week or 2 weeks later, here she is, suddenly she's Aboriginal, and, you know, talking with a whole bunch of people about how to recruit other Aboriginal people into that movement. So it's active organisation within these channels, and it's as cynical and as flagrant as that. It's disappointing when our mob, including my family, fall for it. That's where we're at. These people are gifted grifters. Mm. And when you come down to exploiting very real fears, or the fact that, you know, people do want to decolonize, and you bring, or not even bring, you import something from North America across and claim that that is the only way to decolonize, and people can't see the hypocrisy in that. That needs to be called out.
Definitely, you know, and the fact that, they're sort of dragging, you know, they're working on the fear and the trauma of our people. You know, if anything, you know, our mob, you know, can be sort of, you know, are sort of seen as one of the most, you know, we have a sort of valid reason why we should be more cynical and why we should be more questioning sort of the government sort of motives and their, you know, as I say, their agenda, you know, with this vaccine. Like, you know, we have, you know, past and continual experience within that. But, you know, as we were alluding to, it's, we've got to be a bit more critical in terms of how we're thinking and how we're moving in regards to the current climate at the moment as well.
Read beyond what's being served up to you in your social media feed.
Yes.
You know, it's that, like, pick up a book. It's the books are out there. They're written by blackfellas. There's a lot of them. Pick one of them up. Start there. But, you know, including my family, not doing that. They get this thing served up to them in social media. Don't have a clue or a handle. Forget about a clue. They just don't have a basic handle on how the algorithm works to serve up a certain type of content to them and impact that has upon their worldview. You know, it's no different than being stuck on the bubble bottle for 12 hours a day. You're stuck in that, you know, that feed in a bubble in your head. That's how it works. It's very deliberate. There's been Cambridge Analytica, there's been just Facebook. There's been inquiries into the way that these people are crafting your worldview. Have a read about that. Start there. And then start asking questions. There's another thing I wanted to bring people's attention to that I've seen over the weekend. Even despite that video being busted, you know, the claims being busted within that video, there was a GoFundMe that had reached around $11,000 before people managed to get it shut down, being run by the Tartarian Australia group. Now, the Tartarian conspiracy is, you know, pretty much as batshit crazy as the QAnon one.
What is it? I've never heard of them.
Well, they had managed to, off the back of the lies that we heard about Northern Territory, managed to get people to commit $11,000 to their GoFundMe before it was pulled down. So, there was no indication on that how that money was going to be used for those communities. This is purely and simply a grift with Aboriginal flag colours all over it. You know, start reading into that sort of thing. If you want to unearth, you know, great crimes and great conspiracies, start having a look at some of the stuff that perhaps you're complicit in distributing. That would be my advice.
Oh, definitely. You know, and as you mentioned, there's a whole host of books, whole host of people that, you know, I urge people to sort of get on and follow, you know, read a bunch of your articles, you know, explaining sort of about this disinformation, this misinformation that's going around over last week and the weekend as well. You know, as much as the, sort of those other videos were shared, there's a whole host of videos of mobbing community, you know, media releases from health organizations, you know, talking about sort of dispelling, you know, this disinformation as well. So definitely get out there and as much as you want to do research, or you say you do research in regards to finding out, you know, what's messed up about COVID or the vaccine, do a bit of research, you know, on what these communities are actually saying in regards to disinformation. And even just do a bit more research on, you know, the military's response in Aboriginal communities and how, you know, they've been complicit into, you know, doing bad things to our mob, you know, under the anti-intervention as well. You know, like, if you want to be angry for the sake of what is happening to Aboriginal people, actually learn about the true history of what's happened and what's continuing to happen. You know, at the height of these rallies over the last couple of weeks, you know, we had three Aboriginal people die in prison custody and police custody within 2 weeks of each other. Two of the mob, I think, was a day after each other, you know. And you know, some of these rally organisers are out there screaming about police brutality and, you know, cops being heavy-handed at the rally, or even, you know, I swear half of them are mates with them anyways, but, you know, like, well, you know, mob are literally passing away, you know, when they're having interactions, you know, with these people. And where's the outrage for that?
Well, if it wasn't as... I mean, there was outrage out there. It wasn't Well, even it's difficult. This scale thing, and even the paper I work for, I was reading a report of the rally down here that was published over the weekend. Now, I don't agree with the tone or the way that article was written. It gives, it lends legitimacy to a very small number of people on the scale of things that turned out on Saturday. And someone pointed it out on Twitter, actually, that, you know, 95% or whatever we're at, you know, broadly speaking in terms of vaccine coverage, wasn't there. And here was the numbers in Victoria were, you know, generously probably around 11,000 to 15,000. But it looked, you know, you could go from 9,000 to 12,000. It was around that figure. And we kind of know this because we've been looking at the rise of Invasion Day rallies down here. And you get a good understanding of the number of people just based on the block where people congregate up there in front of Parliament House, Spring Street and Burke. So it was not that many people. But the main thing is, getting back to what you were saying, if everybody has got this big bend for conspiracy theories and you know, unpacking the machinery of government, just have a look at some of the very real policies that have been in the past or ones that continue still to this day and the impact that they had on Aboriginal people. And then get off your ass and give us a hand at fixing some of them up or dispelling or, you know, deconstructing some of them. Because these are ones that have, as you say, very affect their lives in a very real way every day. They're not, you know, conspiracies at all, you know, and certainly not sort of conspiracies on that QAnon level. So, you know, if you want to get active, if you want to be politically active, there's lots to do. You don't get to lead it. You get to sit down and listen to how it should be done. And that's probably the problem, brother, is that there's a lot of chiefs out there in these parts, you know, these agendas, these movements, who are doing it. They're on the grift because they want to be held in high regard by a lot of people. And when they don't get that, they, you know, they get a deprivation of relevance and go to new extremes to regain that prominence and popularity amongst the people.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And we've seen in the past that, you know, they just implode on each other as well. So, you know, I do sort of, well, I can't wait for that, you know, once we start seeing, you know, all these followers implode on each other in regards to who wants to be the main guy or the main leader and whatnot. And that always happens with these groups, you know, countless times over the last, you know, 5 to 6 years, we've literally seen these groups do exactly that as well. So, you know, give it a bit of time, you know, and hopefully, you know, we'll all be getting ready for Invasion Day, very shortly as well. And let's not forget that as well. The biggest day, on the calendar for, you know, our people on this continent as well. So, you know, that's definitely, you know, what a lot of us have our mind fixed to, as well as sort of, you know, dispelling this disinformation that is happening right now.
Well, interestingly, and this probably needs to be pointed out too, coming from a Victorian perspective, is that these groups approached the organisers of the Invasion Day rally down here, some of which are war and others, and they tried to recruit them into the agendas that we're seeing that we see on Saturday, and there's probably going to be more of them. Now, here's a demonstration of leadership. Those people were told, go and get stuffed. And I think there should be more of that. I mean, in Sydney, we've seen Uncle Max Harrison involved in Saturday's one. Now, he is, as in the article points out, he's attached to the Informed Medical Options Party as a cultural advisor. He wasn't there as a representative of the Yuin people. He was there as an employee of the Informed Medical Options Party, but they did not make that clear on any of the...
Of course they don't.
...posters or anything like that. Again, if you start, to the listeners out there, if you start seeing, the images of people from community that you may recognise, may have had dealings with in the past, may have supported in the past, have a look into why they're fronting up. Nine times out of ten, there's some sort of grift in place.
And have a listen and read a black media. You know, I think we're doing a good job at sort of going in and talking to the people who have, been on the ground and been active in sort of dispelling this disinformation that has been coming out over the last 18 months as well. So, as well as sort of, doing your own research, have a listen to, have a share, watch black media, watch Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander media talking about what is actually happening on the ground in these communities.
Yeah, and look, if you've got an aversion to, the paper that I work for at the moment, that's fair enough too. It hasn't had a great track record and it's trying to improve stuff but not doing it quick enough or whatever. But go to First Nations Media Australia and look, find the media outlets either in your locality or within your region and listen to them. Like, there's no reason, there's not a grand conspiracy. There's not satanic warfare. How ridiculous is that? Jump up in front of people. There's satanic warfare going on here. What does that even mean for starters? These sorts of things not going on. You can listen to people from within your community on your local radio or in the news outlet and start making your mind up from there.
Definitely. Brother Jack, thanks for coming on and have this chat with us. It's an important conversation to continue to have as well. And, appreciate the work that you do for our mob on reporting, what is happening and where it's happening and when it's happening as well. Because the article does come as a bit of a breath of fresh air. I think is the right way to say it. almost had a bit of a tongue tie there. It comes at the right time.
Well, it is, and thanks for having me on. And, as those old ones were saying to me on Friday, I urge yourself and other people that are active in community and other listeners out there to start to start calling out these grifters. And it's down to us now because the old ones are getting on a bit.
Definitely. My guest, Jack Lattimore, joining me. He just wrote his piece in the Sydney Morning Herald. If you want to read that, just go head to Google that their name, and it'll come up as well. I'm going to put a link to that article in the blurb for the podcast. I want to put a link into the Raise of the Age bill that the Greens are passing and want to put through. The submissions for that close Tuesday. Actually, this morning, I caught up with the Greens member for Maywa, Michael Berkman, and we had a bit of a chat about the importance of this bill, which I'm going to play right now for you guys. And just really quickly before we wrap the show up, I have Michael Berkman, Greens member for Maywa, on the phone, and we're just going to have a quick chat about the Greens Raise the Age of Criminal Responsibility Bill. Michael Berkman, thank you for coming on the program this morning.
All good. Yeah, good to be with you.
Awesome. So last week, just recently, we caught up for an event in West End regarding the Raise the Age bill. We watched a film called In My Blood It Runs, an amazing film But yeah, just really quickly, could you tell us a bit about this bill?
Yeah, for sure. It's look, it's a pretty simple piece of legislation that just aims to bring Queensland into line with, you know, basic human rights obligations. So it proposes to raise the age of criminal responsibility from 10 to 14, and also makes sure that any kids who are incarcerated or kind of facing consequences as a result of offences they committed when they were younger than 14, that all of that's expunged from their history and that no one is detained. So, look, it's really important stuff. It's something that the state government's failed to act on for too long. So we've taken this step of introducing the bill. And, look, I'm really hopeful that we can get a bunch more people engaged and making submissions on the bill before the end of tomorrow. So the Community Support and Services Committee is running an inquiry at the moment. So they're accepting submissions until 5 p.m. tomorrow on Tuesday the 30th of November. So anyone interested in this issue, if they could just jump online and, it doesn't need to be a long submission, but we're just trying to demonstrate how much support there is in the community for this change so that we can, you know, we can stop locking up our babies and, have the law in line with not just human rights expectations and our obligations, but also with all the medical evidence that tells us that kids that young are just, they're just too young to be treated as having any kind of criminal intent.
Just really quickly on that as well, when we hear, we want to sort of, once we raise it to 14, there's a whole bunch of kids who have committed crimes and need to be punished, and so what, do they get off scot-free? So in regards to, you know, raising the age to 14, what happens to those other kids that we as a society sort of deem have committed crimes and need to be held responsible?
Yeah, this is certainly one of the most common questions that people put. And, my first response is, well, what do we do with kids under 10 at the moment? I mean, we've got an arbitrary line in the sand now, which says that we need to find other ways to deal with kids younger than 10. And those alternative non-criminal approaches are what we need to apply to kids between 10 and 13 years old. So what that means in practice is that we're providing, you know, diversionary programs to keep kids out of courts and you know, alternatives to prison, like the supports that they need. Because, you know, kids at that age, you know, if they're engaged in this kind of problematic behaviour, it usually speaks to some unmet need in their lives, whether that's, you know, family struggles or, you know, finding just, you know, having a safe place to live or you know, oftentimes there's trauma in the background for these kids. So it's about focusing on the causes of the behaviour and not just responding with this reactive, you know, lock them up and throw away the key type approach, because we know that's not working. It's clearly not working, and the evidence is crystal clear that if, you know, the earlier a kid comes in contact with courts or with detention, the more likely they are to reoffend as they get older. So it's absolutely back to front to lock kids up and think we're achieving anything. It's actually a huge backward step in terms of even just that basic objective of improving community safety and reducing recidivism.
Oh, definitely. And also just looking at sort of the learning, the development of young kids who are 10 to 14, and then also looking at and from previous conversations with yourself and Amnesty International and many others who have sort of done key work within this space have indicated that many children, you know, above 14 as well as below, have some sort of learning difficulties that they have developed or were born with as well, and, you know, get sort of thrusted into these institutions and undiagnosed or even diagnosed as well. And obviously I'm sure that may have a big effect on them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the starting point is that kids at that age haven't, like, their brain development's at a stage where, you know, they haven't developed the kind of complex reasoning part of their brain, which allows us to kind of understand consequences and control impulses and, you know, all of that kind of complex thought process that we assume, you know, makes punishment have some kind of effect. It just doesn't work that way with kids. But as you say, there's so much, and I've only really come to understand the extent of this recently, that there's so much undiagnosed cognitive impairment amongst kids of this age. Things like, you know, FASD is the classic example. There are some studies in Western Australia which show that that extraordinary proportion of kids in detention in WA have FASD or fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. So, you know, it's like the process of just charging and incarcerating kids completely overlooks these underlying causes and doesn't do anything to help the kids, their families, their communities, everyone that's in a, you know, the best position to help, you know, give these kids a brighter future and, you know, and options.
Mm. I guess just lastly as well, before I let you go, where can people go to put a submission in to find more information?
Yeah, for sure. So it's the Community Support and Services Committee, so a parliamentary committee that's undertaking the inquiry. So you can chase that up through the parliamentary website. The other option is that if you just Google Greens Raise the Age Bill or Michael Berkman Raise the Age, that'll take you to my website where we've got a bit of information about where you can make a submission directly to the committee or a simple form submission just to make it easier. We'd love it for anyone who's using that form submission to add their own perspective and experience, just because that's the stuff that I think is really valuable in these conversations. But yeah, Google Michael Berkman and Raise the Age and that'll give you all the info you need at this stage.
Awesome. Thanks, brother. This is so important that we get around and support this as a key issue. One, because 10-year-olds shouldn't be locked up. Two, you know, if you're a parent, you know, I have two children, 4 and 2. They'll be 5 and 3 next year. And just to thinking of this is just sort of, you know, I don't want to think about it, you know, and we shouldn't be going through a process like this. We should be campaigning, you know, to stop the imprisonment and incarceration, or the detention of 10-year-olds, anywhere, let alone in the world, but here in Australia. But, please get onto Michael Berkman's website. Please support this campaign as well. We have till 5 p.m. Tomorrow. I'll continue to pump this out. We'll actually put a link in today's episode as well, where people can go and add submissions as well. But thanks again, Michael.
No worries. Thank you, Bo. Thanks for your support on this.
And just head to Michael Berkman's website, or if you just Google Michael Berkman, the Greens Bill Raise the Age, it'll come up. I'll put a link in the podcast as well. It's important that we get around to this, you know, send it to your local member, put in submissions. You know, you can, as Michael said, if you have personal experience with this, you can sort of tweak the submission to your own liking as well. It's important that we get around this. And it's important that, you know, we get our babies out, and it's important that we start to create alternatives, not just to incarceration, but to programs that support not just these young people, but their families and communities who do go through these processes as well. If you've enjoyed the program, you can catch the repeat at 7 p.m. tonight, but also go to our website at 989fm.com.au for the links to the podcast, and it'll be up very shortly. As always, it's a pleasure. You've been listening to Let's Talk here on Murray Country 98.9 FM.